Hello, everyone, and welcome to the newest episode of Constructive Criticism. I'm your guest host this week, Mason, and I'm joined by Silver Pro basketball aficionado. Is that the word? I thought that's the wrong word. Michael Hinderoff.
I'm pretty sure aficionado is not a word, but I enjoy it nonetheless. How's it going, Mason?
Good. Spencer is filling in. I'm filling for Spencer this week. He has some family stuff with being a dad and all, whatever that means. I mean, whatever. If your kid can't handle it on the streets, you know, whatever. They got a podcast to record. So I'm filling in for Spencer. It's going to be a lot of fun, Michael. I'm excited to talk this week. I think it's going to be a good time.
Yeah, it should be good. Get to talk about modern.
Yeah.
Some stuff and talk about playing from ahead. So it should be a good show.
Yep. You know what else would be a good show, Michael? Watching the speedy delivery of the U.S. mail from our sponsor, Oasis Games. Oasis Games opened up a brand new store recently.
That was a good one. That took a lot of effort. I appreciate that.
Thank you. Much like Oasis Games does with your order. You know, I recently ordered some cards, got today in the mail. They didn't have. I ordered a lightly played Gavney Township in Spanish, and they didn't have it, so they gave me a near mint English one. So that's the kind of stuff they'll do for you, you know.
Not have the cards in the inventory.
Well, this accidentally messed up. That happens. You know, you just moved. That's fine. But instead, you gave me a more expensive version of the cards. That's just good value. So I'm excited. You know what else you can see for our sponsor is the mana base. Certain people on that side of the world, you know, they might beat me in Magic every now and again. You can check out Nikachu, us. They really try to help out people that are up-and-coming content creators. And, yeah, we thank them a lot for supporting us. And I think, Michael, you still there? I think.
Should be. I don't know why my internet is a little flickery, but it should be. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay.
All right, yeah. That was weird. We lost you there for a second, but it's fine. Just like I lost the Nikachu for a second. It's fine. It happens. But the one thing that we can't lose is the respect we have for our patrons. Thank you so much for all these patrons. We have some new ones I get to shout out, Michael. So I'm excited to do this. Here we got Jonathan K. and Nathan K. I'm curious, are they brothers or is it a coincidence?
It's probably a coincidence, but for future reference, like, you know, if you want to be recognized as family, we'll do that, I suppose.
Yeah. If you and your friend both sign up as Patreon and you have something that might link you as family, you know, then we'll do it. We'll support you that way. Because we're here to help you. But one of the cool things about Patreon that we haven't got to do for a little bit because we just haven't had any questions that didn't relate to the show or didn't come up organically is we have a Patreon question. So one of the benefits of being a Patreon is you can message Spencer or Michael and then they'll answer a question on the show. So Michael, this week's Patreon question is, what goals do the hosts have of the show for 2018, both in magic and in life? So Michael, kick it off.
Ask. I'm not the person to ask for life goals or life advice. Like, I have no idea what my goals are for life in 2018. I should probably work on that. I mean, that sounds like a strong. It sounds like a weakness to me. But my life goals for 2018 right now are limited, so I'll work on that part. As far as magic goes, I just kind of want to keep it rolling. I would love a finish in Bilbao that would set me up for getting gold. I think. A minimum, so like, you know, a missing day two or a really mediocre to bad finish will put me at 17 for the year. So, you know, I'm about on pace regardless, but if I can have a good finish, that would put me in really good shape for getting gold. Just working on trying to get better.
Definitely. So my goal for 2018 when it comes to life is I'm going to try and continue to keep eating healthier and just be healthier, working out, all that kind of stuff. I used to be really healthy back in the day, and then like I got to college, and I was kind of like, whatever. And now we're here, and now we're like trying to get back to that point. So I want to do that and keep things going, smooth with job and life and all that good stuff. And then when it comes
to
that's
a good goal.
Yeah.
That's a good goal.
I think it also helps magic, you know, like, if you're healthy, then, you know, you're going to think easier. I won't have to eat as much food. I won't have to pay for, like, there was $11 Chick-fil-A at the GP in Atlanta, Michael. $11. Man,
I probably still would have had something to eat, but, you know, I'd have felt bad about it.
Nope. I just walked to the Chick-fil-A across the street. There's the CNN Center next door. Get it for $5. Not happening. Not happening. But
I mean, yeah? It feels aggressive to compete with yourself.
Well, they do that kind of stuff all the time. And I saw people buying $11 Chick-fil-A's. I wanted to go, you can walk like 500 feet and you'll get a Chick-fil-A. I don't know. Whatever. Doesn't matter. But when it comes to Magic, I'm really trying to push for bronze. And if I can get bronze quick enough, I would try and make a run at silver. With the way the new rolling system works, I mean, you know, you should just always be making pushes. Because that's kicked in now, right, Michael? So
yeah, it's interesting. Like, sort of any good single event can sort of be, if you think of that. So, like, before, you needed your good events early in the season, like, to justify a lot of travel or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're kind of in the spot where any single good event, like, should you top 8 a GP or qualify for a Pro Tour, things kind of, you can just sort of be like, well, starting now I'm going to try.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It definitely gives you a little more flexibility with just how you try to time things, which is kind of interesting. And it also, but on the flip side, it also forces you to try to maintain balance quarter to quarter, right? Like, you don't want 17 or 18 points in a single quarter.
Yeah, because right? Then you really, like...
Because it's going away. To be very hard to replace those.
Yeah.
Right. Definitely. So it's interesting. It's just a little bit different.
Yep. Yeah, so I'm going to try and keep pushing towards that. And when it comes to Magic, the game itself... I'm going to be doing a lot of limited practice. I'm doing the Team GP with Danny, hosts a limited time only, a Magic the Gathering podcast about limited on the network. And so I'm going to be practicing a lot of limits and doing it with him and my friend Trey. So I'm excited to do that. And then the RPTQ that I'm queued for is also limited. So I've got to really get Rivals of Ixalan Center down, which I can only hope it is half as good as Ixalan. That's just the real dream, Miss Michael.
If it's half as good as Ixalan, it would be literally unplayable. So I think we should hope it's more like twice as good as Ixalan.
Nope, I just want it to be miserable the whole time. That's how okay. I want my Magic to be. Just miserable sure. Or hour. All I want. No in between.
I understand, you know, wanting to be miserable. I can appreciate that.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you so much for the question. That was all I have, and I'm sure... If you want to talk to Spencer about it, he would be glad to talk to you about it as well. Let's move on to hashtag always improving. Hashtag always improving is the point of the show. We really do think that if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. And part of getting better is always working on something. So, Michael, what is your hashtag always improving moment this week?
My always improving moment has mostly just been taking a little bit of a break, just having played like 4 weekends in a row with like GP Pro Tour, RPTQ GP. I've been able to take it pretty easy the last, like, since getting back from Portland. I guess the last couple of weeks have been pretty slow for me. I've been playing some modern, trying to figure out sort of what I like, given that that is the Pro Tour format. But my next event is probably going to be Santa Clara, so not for another month or so, and just really enjoying have a little bit of time where there's nothing so imminent. Because, I mean, I love playing Magic, but you can't help but be a little burnt out after 4 weeks playing events in a row.
Yeah, definitely. Mine's pretty similar. I've been taking a bit of a break from playing, like, hyper-competitive decks. I had, you know, PPDQ, RPDQ, and GP, not quite in that order, a bunch of weeks in a row. And I've got an IQ coming up next week. So I kind of took the last week and plan to take this week off a little bit and just have some more fun playing Magic, so... I've been playing decks like the Green White Company deck, 8 Rack, stuff like that, just to relax and have a good time playing it. But while playing them, I'm trying to make sure that my play is always sharp, because that's, I think, a real flaw in my game, is that sometimes I'll get too far ahead, and then I get a little sloppy. So I'm trying to work on that.
Yeah, I think just like trying to focus on making good play a constant, whether the deck you're playing is especially good or not. Right, sort of separating those two from each other, and like anytime you play Magic, the goal is going to be to play well.
Mm-hmm.
I think that can really help.
Yeah, that's what I've been trying to do. So, you know, when I really started playing competitively, which was like 9 months ago, I think my biggest weakness is actual in-game stuff, and so I've been continuously working on that. So, Yeah, just always chipping away at it. Well, let's move on to the deck doctor of the week, because another bonus of being a patron is the deck doctor. So you can send us a deck list. We'll talk about it on the show and what we think about it, what we love, what we hate, et cetera, et cetera. But first, let's read off the deck list for the people at home. Michael?
Yeah, so it looks like we got 2 Glorybringers, 2 Gonti, Lord of Luxury, 2 Hostage Taker, 2 Kefnet the Mindful, 1 Noxious Gearhulk, 2 Scarab God, 2 Torrential Gearhulk, 2 Vizier of Many Faces, 3 Whirl of Virtuosos, 2 Abraid, 3 Fatal Push, 4 Harness Lightning, 3 Supreme Will, 2 Vraska's Contempt, 2 Liliana Death's Majesty, 3 Saheeli, and then, let's see, it looks like we got 14, 18, 19, 20, we have 24 lands, and then the sideboard is 1 Dream Stealer, 2 Gifted Aetherborn, 2 Glintsleeve Siphoner, 2 Chandra's Defeat, 2 Negate, a Doomfall, 3 Duress, a Yhenny's Expertise, and a Chandra.
All right, well, let's start off. Michael, what's the first thing you, like, what do you love about this deck? What are the things you like?
I like the removal suite. I like how many removal spells you get to play, and I like how mana efficient they are. I've also tried Supreme Will in a couple of different shells lately, and I have liked that card more than I thought I would.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I like that the deck has got a lot of really powerful removal, and that it's trying to leverage Scarab God in a couple of unique ways as well, like with Hostage Shaker, Vizier, Noxious Gearhulk, Gonti. Those are all cards that work really well with the Scarab God. So I like all of those things. This is interesting because I haven't had a lot of style with this kind of deck in the format. I've been playing a lot of Teemer personally. I know that you've been playing decks that are closer to this with the 4-color Teemer, not the Teemer Black. So I'm curious to know, what don't you like about this deck compared to the other decks? Like the other styles of decks like this?
Looking at this deck, my biggest thought is that it is almost certainly too few lands. Like 24 is just not enough lands. If you look at like the First Strike Grixis deck, I think that deck is playing 26. Most of the Teemer decks that are focusing more heavily on Scarab God are playing 22 and 4 attunes. So I think you're a little bit short on mana sources, especially when you start cutting Rogue Refiner, which, you know, functions pretty well as a cantrip. And sort of getting into that, I also think your aggro matchups are going to be pretty weak despite...
Yeah, despite having all those removal
spells. Going to make an average. I think your World of Virtuosos are going to make an average of less than one Thopter.
Yeah.
I think you're going to get them killed with the trigger on the stack the majority of the time and not make a single Thopter.
Yeah, it does seem a little weird along that way. And I agree. I think your mono red matchup, and maybe the plan is just to concede that matchup. I'm not sure. But it does seem like the matchup's miserable. And another thing to go along with all that is the 3 Saheelis seem a little ambitious. Like, there's not a whole lot that you're copying that you're really happy with that isn't super late game. So I almost wish those are cards dedicated to mono red somehow.
They just get tricky. So, like, there's a lot of cute things you can do with it in this deck. I mean, copying, basically, Glorybringer, Gonti, Hostage Taker, any Gearhulk or a Whirler or a Vizier, like, all of those are powerful things you can do. And Liliana kind of fits into the same category as far as, like, those are, you know, really powerful cards to reanimate. But I think in general, just the Kefnets, I think this deck is just going to end up being really clunky.
Yeah. I imagine that if you have a very, like, and maybe this was the case when building the deck, that if your metagame is a lot of Teemer and they're all leading, like, building the deck slower, right, and you're, like, at a PBDQ scene, this could be pretty good and maybe take a week by surprise. But I think it's got a lot of clunkiness to it, and the mono red game is going to be so hard. Also, it's worth noting that, I mean, they might have accidentally sent us the wrong deck list, but the deck they did send us was 61 cards. So I'd probably want to cut, you know, a Saheeli or a Liliana right there and just get down to 60.
Yeah, I'm most nervous about the Kefnets, really.
That's the card you hate the most?
It just seems tricky to get use out of.
Yeah.
Like, if you're getting use out of it, it's kind of a bad thing, right? Because it basically means you didn't make a turn 1 or 2 play, at which point, although a 5-5 is, you know, good, it's not going to win the game on its own.
Yeah, I imagine it's more for a repeatable card draw. Like, they just want the bottom half, they never want it to be a 5-5. But I think you could play Glintsleeve Siphoner, probably draw more cards, and have better synergy with your World of Virtuosos and stuff, so...
Yeah, I mean, I mostly just feel like I mean, if you actually are living to the late game in this deck, you're playing like a bunch of Gonti's Hostage Takers, multiple Gear Hulks, Viziers, and Scarab Gods, plus multiple Planeswalkers. I mean, I don't think you need help in the late game.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I would probably take the Kefta now. I just don't think when they were building the deck, I don't think their plan was, oh, I want a 5-5. I think they were like, oh, I want a way to draw cards. So, but I think if you want to draw cards, you have Glinthus Siphoner on the board, and then you'll have 4 out of your 75 if you want it. So that's nice and kind of an easy switch there.
Yeah, I think just more ways to make energy. I mean, this is generally my problem with the Grixis deck as a whole, just that I think the Whirler Virtuosos are, like, pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
They just aren't going to make Thopters very often.
Yeah, it kind of seems that way. And I think that kind of covers it for me on the deck. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, that's about it.
Yeah. Well, I like the ambition, and I hope that I can see a future build in the Constructed Critics group, where you can go if you're a patron, of a updated list. I think that'd be awesome. So we're going to move on to power rankings now. This week we're doing Modern. We're looking at the Goldfish rankings right now. So the Goldfish rankings using the Moto data that we do get along with RPTQs, SCGs, etc. And we just had a lot of Modern results posted up from the Invitational split format. I don't think Goldfish uses that, but there was a Classic and a Modern open this weekend. So there's a lot of Modern data, a lot of things have been happening. And our number 5 deck, Michael, is Grixis Death Shadow.
I don't know. I still really like this deck, and I really like these lists. I've played it a little bit lately, and Opt has been phenomenal for me.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like Opt is a serious upgrade over Serum Visions in the deck? Because you'll still see decks playing about 2 or 3 Serum Visions.
Yeah, I think we were playing maybe only 3 Opts with still 4 Serum Visions and 4 Thought Scours.
Mm-hmm.
But I mostly felt like after turn 1, Opt was almost strictly better. And just in general, my inclination would be to go to a list that looks a little more like what Dylan Donegan... I assume this is his list from the team open that he won.
I do believe it's his team open deck list, not the...
Although, to be fair, you know, he was also playing with, I believe it was Oliver 2 and...
Yes.
And Noah Walker, so, yeah. You know. Yeah. His team was pretty outrageous. Still, I think this deck is quite good. I think it's getting back into a better position in the format. It looks like Eldrazi Tron has kind of fallen off a little bit. And I do think Opt is really powerful in this deck.
Yeah, I kind of agree with your statement. By the way, I think I'm getting a little bit of echo on your end. I don't know if you have me turned up. But regardless, I think Serum Visions is really good in the early game because you need to find certain like a threat pretty quickly with the disruption. So it's nice to have Serum Visions to like see more cards, right? But the Opt is better as the game gets on. I agree with that because you start looking for specific pieces.
Like, yeah, more than that, you just can't afford the brick. Like
that's true.
Serum Visions is good at finding a specific card, and when your hand sort of just generically needs most anything. The drawing the card before scrying first doesn't hurt you that much. But past about turn 2, it starts getting pretty important that the card you actually find immediately has an impact, and Serum Visions is pretty bad on that end.
Yep. I also just kind of want to point out real quick that the first time I was on the show was about 6 months ago, right when Grixis Death Shadow was taking off, and there was a lot of talk about wanting to ban Death Shadow or maybe something to be banned, and now we look at it and it's just like, I think Modern is a healthier format with Death Shadow in it, and I'm glad to see that like the format can adapt and the deck isn't, you know, just still dominating. It just has moments when
it's good.
It's awesome. Yeah.
It's good. I mean, it's clearly very good. No one would tell you this deck is bad, but it has its issues, and I think it's interesting both to play and build. Like, if you look, there are a lot of... It looks like we're playing 4 one-ofs in this list.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say the K Command, Dismember, Terminate, and Battle Rage, along with at least the 4th Snapcaster Mage, and probably one of the cantrips overall, are all sort of flex slots. So I think there's a lot of... you get a lot of choices with this deck, and I think that's you know, mostly what I'm looking for, at least.
Agreed, yeah. And the sideboard, too. I mean... The only thing I think is stock in the sideboard is have whatever stubs you don't have in the main deck. That's
sure,
like
you have at least
about.
One more Stubborn Denial and usually at least one Ceremonious Rejection.
Yep.
And other than that, it's sort of up for grabs.
Yep, and I really like that. I think that's awesome. Well, let's move on to our number 5 deck, which is another deck that has a lot of awesome cards in it.
Our number four, number five deck.
Number four, sorry, number four, five-color deck. My mistake there. It's five-color humans. Michael, I haven't got to hear you talk about this deck. I'm going to talk to you about this deck. What do you think of this one? It's kind of taken the SCG circuit by storm with Collins Mullins.
Yeah, I mean, I think Collins Mullins is just a pretty good player, and I don't think this deck's especially good, but I think that against weaker players, Aether Vial is just very hard to play against when it represents this many different effects. And I think that this is, like, an extremely good Aether Vial deck, right? Like, when you look at, like, Meddling Mage, Kitesail, Freebooter, Thalia, along with Thalia's Lieutenant, specifically, like...
And Reflector Mage.
Well, but those are all on two.
Oh, yeah,
right?
sure.
So you have, and I mean, Mayor of Averbrook in sort of the same light. There's a lot of stuff where... if you misread your opponent or your opponent is able to sort of trick you, you get punished very, very badly. And I think that this deck hits a really nice sweet spot in terms of being, you know, it's not especially powerful, but powerful enough to not be embarrassing on power level. And then a lot of really tricky little things that if your opponents are making any mistakes, you really get to punish them for that.
Gotcha. Yeah. It's interesting because I agree with your statements that the Aether Vial, especially on two, is very hard to play around, and that this is a great Aether Vial deck. I mean, I think this is a much better Aether Vial deck than Fish is by not
right,
close.
Yeah.
But I think this deck really does have legs. Yeah.
It's sort of like that, right? I mean, it's like this deck honestly ends up being quite similar to Merfolk in a lot of ways.
Yes, it definitely does. I think this deck is probably... A, better than Merfolk, and B, I think it's a deck that we're not going to see going anywhere anytime soon.
No, I don't. What I mean is I would be shocked if this were, like, the dominant deck in a format.
I wouldn't say that. My bad.
This deck is good. I think that it benefits... It has done really well at the SCG level, largely because every little mistake your opponents make is magnified when you have so many flexible... Like, there are just a lot of flexible cards and a lot of opportunities for your opponents to play poorly into what you have.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, it's a deck where you tend to get to both have a number of pretty uninteractive draws, anything like Thalia into Freebooter into Meddling Mage... is just really hard to interact with for a bunch of decks. Champion of the Parish can be hard for some decks to interact profitably with. Like, I think more than anything, this deck just has a variety of effects, and if you understand how to sequence and deploy those better than your opponents understand how to play against them, which I think is obviously the case with someone like Collins Mullen, it really, really puts you in an advantage, and this deck sort of leverages that more than almost any other deck.
Yeah. It also does, like, a fundamental rule I have in Modern when I'm playing decks at a tournament level is that I want it to be, like, proactive, and I want it to be very, like, good at executing its game plan.
Yeah. So this is the kind of deck where you're going to get some free wins.
Yes.
Right? You're going to get some number of just, like, Noble into Thalia into... like. Basically, when you have Thalia on the play, if Thalia is good against your opponent's deck, they almost can't win.
Yeah, definitely. And then if not, you can still just go, like, Champion into Thalia's Lieutenant into Mana Shrider, and you're just...
Yeah, and there's a lot of opportunities for your opponents to make little missteps and for you to punish that, like, with 3-mana Thalia, Reflector Mage, Freebooter, Meddling Mage, Draw Step tricks, things like that. There's just a lot of little things that give this deck a surprising amount of play for a deck playing like 45 creatures or whatever it is.
Yep.
I mean, I'm sure it's not 45, but it's a lot.
It is a lot. The last thing I'll say on it is, I think the biggest flaw is its sideboard. It is like it has to basically play creatures.
Yeah.
Only.
Yes, that is the biggest problem. The biggest problem with the deck by far is that Cavern, Unclaimed Territory, and Ancient Ziggurat build you a very painless mana base, which is really powerful in game ones, but the big drawback of that is that you very much can't play like Stony Silence or Rest in Peace, despite being white and not being especially hampered by either card, because you can't cast them consistently.
Yep.
And things like Vithian Renegades or whatever just aren't on the same power level.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Vithian Renegades.
And there's I mean, that's the thing. There's like, there's just real tension in the deck, and I think that that's perhaps its biggest issue. And if anything does hold it back in the longer term, that would be my guess as to what it would be.
Yep. All right, well, let's move on to the next deck. The deck that some people want cards banned from, Michael, Blue-Red Gift Storm, coming at number 3. Michael, what do you think about this deck?
I'm surprised that people want cards banned from this. It just, I mean, it's good, but
yeah,
it certainly doesn't seem oppressive. This list is a little bit unusual in that it looks like Illy has opted for a number of... So the main consensus at this point was, prior to this event, I guess, was that if you were not playing Blood Moon in the board, fetch lands were worse than just playing the full set of Shivan Reefs and Steam Fence.
Mm-hmm.
I think Caleb Scherer had sort of popularized that specific list with that exact setup. Sea Beyond is also quite unusual, but depending on how many like Thought Seizes you expect to play against, I can see that card doing a sort of piece of the puzzle impression in main deck games.
Yeah, I think this is... I know this is Ely's deck, but I'm pretty sure it's the one he won the Invitational with. So he was probably expecting a good bit of Death Shadow in the Modern rounds.
Yeah.
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 So probably a little metagame there as well. And you also see where he has an Empty the Warren's main deck, which you don't always see. And like you said, the fetch lands as well. But, yeah, I think this deck is really good. I don't know if I was in charge of the ban list, I would ban a card from it. I would definitely think about it. But it is a deck that I would not be surprised to, you know, wake up the week after the Pro Tour and Bill Bow and be like, oh, they banned a card.
It's possible, but I have a hard time feeling like this deck is super oppressive. I mean, if you look, like, I would say this has pretty bad matchups against the number 5 and 4 deck.
Yes, it's number 5 and 4 are very bad. And then I think number 1 and number 2 are also bad. But still with all that, it's coming at number 3, and I think that kind of speaks to how good the deck is if you can't, like, if you try to do anything that isn't super proactive or have a bunch of answers, right?
On
the
My concerns. Guess is that its Jeskai matchup is actually quite good.
Oh, you think Jeskai's quite good?
Yes. Okay. I don't think Jeskai pressures well enough. Jeskai, like, just looking at this Jeskai list, I've played decks like this a lot against combo decks in a variety of formats, and, like, the Jeskai deck runs way too much a risk of drawing the wrong half of the deck.
That's fair. Yeah, if you draw the wrong, I guess it's very, like, easy to, like, hit Lightning Helix.
You have a lot of cards that just don't do anything. Like, Lightning Helix and Lightning Bolt and Electrolyze and, like, Geist are all nice, and I guess that they, you know, you can apply some sort of a clock, but you're going to struggle with casting multiple counter spells in the same cycle. So, like, it's very hard if they cast a Gifts Ungiven and you have to decide whether to Cryptic Command it or not. Your Cryptic Command is usually going to tap you out.
That's
right,
very
it's
true.
Very hard to have, like to cast Cryptic Command plus Logic Knot, you need 5 blue sources. So my guess is that the Jeskai matchup is actually quite favored for Storm if the Storm player is good. But I know from experience that both the Grixis Death Shadow and Humans matchups are pretty miserable.
Yeah, I've played both those decks against Storm and it's felt great. I have not played the Jeskai deck against it, but. Do you not think that the fact that this deck can kill on turn 3 would mean to be a reason to get banned?
I mean, that just hasn't seemed to be, like, quite as strong a standard. I think that, like, the fact that it can kill on turn 3, but it's disruptible on, like, any axis on those turn 3 kills. Like, literally a Lightning Bolt or a Path to Exile or a Remand or a Thoughtseize mostly busts up any turn 3 kill. Like, it's very, very difficult for the Storm deck to kill you turn 3 through any sort of interaction.
Right, that's fair. So before we move on, what do you think about this Platinum Empyrean on the sideboard? We see people do it every now and again. What's your opinion on it?
Yeah, I haven't played it in Storm specifically. I'm a little surprised that he would play it with this many fetch lands. Because you can't use a fetch land once you have a Platinum Empyrean in play.
Oh, sure.
So it's something that can come back to bite you a little bit sometimes. But it seems interesting. I mean, I guess I'm not sure. I don't like it in decks where people will keep in Kolaghan's Command against you, because I think one of the great advantages of a combo like this is that you really only need you just need to resolve a single spell. The Sebions are also super cute with the Platinum Empyrean, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, it allows you to maybe get away with only playing a single one, whereas normally you have to play two.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I don't know. I'm iffy on the sideboard Platinum Empyrean. I haven't. That's not something that's common in Storm, and it's not something I have a lot of experience with personally. What do you think about it?
So I think it's something that you can play on weekends, but if it ever becomes established, it's hard to play it, right? It has a
Right. I
really
mean,
big
that's
gotcha
just true of
factor.
that combo in general, right? Like, if people aren't ready for it, it's pretty insane.
Right, which is which is my opinion on it. Like, if no one thinks your deck does that, or it isn't common enough that they're not going to sideboard in for it, it's going to be effective. But as soon as they know about it, the jig is kind of up in a way.
Yeah, I guess I can see that. I guess more than that, I'm just curious about, like, what I guess it's basically good in most non-path matchups if your opponent just doesn't expect you to have it,
Yeah, I mean, that'd be
right?
my assumption, is that you're bringing it against decks that
I
can't
guess.
path it.
I mean, it's probably good against Affinity, for example,
Yeah.
especially in the boarded games. It's
Affinity
probably
humans.
and humans as well, because they well, I mean, the problem is they're gonna have stuff like Reflector Mage still, most likely.
Well, they're probably going to trim on it, right? Because
Maybe a
of.
little bit, but I think you might be surprised. Like, that's still pretty good against.
The
I don't
Baral.
know. The real problem is you have to win two sideboarded games, right?
That's true. Yeah.
That's always that's th this is always my problem with this package in general, right? It's like, it's cute, but it's really hard to do twice. And if a matchup requires that kind of thing, like, I mean, maybe he just figures that there are so many matchups where he's getting blindsided by pieces of hate he can't figure out how to play around, that his solution is just,
Make an
all
8/8.
right, you're going to bring in weird hate. I'm just going to try to sidestep and hope that it's good.
Yeah. I will note that he has a lot of hate, it seems, for humans and affinity. For affinity, he has Rite of Replicate, which I assume is also for Chalice, and Biforce, and two
Yeah.
Angers, and
Yeah,
three
the
Bolts.
Shattering Spree
Shattering
plus.
Spree, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm curious what the sideboard plans look like in some of these matchups, because my guess is you can't really side in like
Yeah.
7 to 8 to 10 cards very easily.
I've never seen Storm do it before, but it looks like, I mean, maybe those cards just aren't for those matchups.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I haven't played enough Storm to be confident in my answers on like the nuances of sideboarding, especially when you get into some boards that are a little untraditional.
Same. I have not played it since GIFs became a thing. Well, let's move on to our number two deck. Jeskai Control is what Goldfish has as. I probably would call it tempo. Michael, what do you think of this deck?
Yeah, it's just Jeskai Geist. Like, it's interesting. I was looking at playing this at the RPTQ potentially, just because this is sort of filling the like Jund and Abzan role in this format. But it's basically that like if you're gonna play against Grixis Death Shadow, you need the reach that Snapcaster and Burn give you.
Bolt, snap, bolt, baby.
Right? I mean, just if your opponent is actually like actively damaging themselves, those cards are really powerful. Spell Queller has its moments. It's not always perfect, but it's definitely good against all the company decks. And it sort of does a nice split role where like one of the things this deck really struggles with is just drawing the wrong half. So Spell Queller is nice in that it's sort of a split card, right? It can kind of be a counter spell, but it's also sometimes just a 2/3.
I agree with that. I like this deck a lot So I'm curious, you know, I think sideboards are such a huge part of Modern. I want to talk to you about the Supreme Verdict and the sideboard. What do you think about this? Because I kind of assumed, like, I saw Settle the Wreckage get printed in Exelon. I was like, oh, they're just going to swap those so you don't kill your own stuff. But they just keep playing it. Like,
my thought is that you are probably bringing in the Verdict.
Oh.
The Geists are coming. Geists in Jace in EE, that kind of something along those lines, and maybe you're cutting spell quellers in those matchups too for like Click, Pia, and Kirin. And what I would guess you're trying to do is mostly just trade one for one until they get wider than your one for one handles very easily, Wrath, and then mostly win by running them out of cards.
Okay, that makes sense. So at that point, you become a control list.
Yeah, you're like my guess is that in a lot of matchups, you end up just playing much less of a tempo game in the boarded games.
That seems fair. I really like that this is a deck, by the way. Like, kind of like in the same way Death Shadow is, like, a real deck. When, like, Death Shadow and this kind of deck are real, I think it makes just the games more fun.
Yeah, I think you need some kind of fun police in the format, and I think both this and Death Shadow in different ways do a nice job of that, actually.
Yeah, and they're not so policey that it's unfun, right?
No. They're certainly not oppressive. I just think having like a little bit, having some decks that aren't just like insanely, absurdly, aggressively proactive all the time, right? Because like you look at a lot of the decks that have been good in Modern over the last couple of years, and it's been just like a lot of decks where the plan is basically to 100% ignore your opponent.
Yeah,
and I like having some decks around that are like a little more interested in actually playing games of interactive magic.
I thought that's the reason people like Modern, because you don't have to play Magic.
Yeah, I mean, it feels that way sometimes. I mean, there are definitely times where, but like, if you look at this deck, you learn a lot about a deck by looking at its sideboard, and like the fact that it's a white deck with no artifacts that's not playing Stony Silence.
Yeah.
Says a lot about the kind of games that it thinks it can win, and the kind, like, that basically says, I can beat Affinity with Is It Staticaster, Electrolyze, and Path.
Yep. And EE. Gotta get on my.
And I think, and I mean, P and Kirin, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, that's the point.
But I think that it's interesting, right? And I kind of like that we've found a place in Modern where I feel like there's a good diversity of decks, but there's also a good diversity of strategies, right? There was a minute where it felt like Become Immense was sort of so oppressive that, like, there was no way you could play a reactive deck.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah,
Become Immense. And I like that we've moved away from sort of, you know, the Become Immense metagame.
Yeah.
As I love Mia Become Immense.
Yeah, I mean, what a great Magic card. Just giant growths on steroids. That's what I love.
Yeah, I mean, it's just interesting to see sort of the shift.
Yeah, definitely. I was thinking, like, man, I haven't seen that card in forever. But do you know what's a deck you probably haven't seen in forever? Assuming you were in a coma when Modern started? Affinity. So,
assuming you've never played Modern before at any point ever?
Yep. Affinity. This deck is so good. Michael, is this? I mean, this has to be a deck you're testing for the Pro Tour, right? It's not going to shock anyone. Or at least considering.
I'm not sure it's a deck I can play at a high enough level, honestly.
Okay. I mean, this deck definitely rewards you for playing it perfectly.
I would say that it rewards you for playing it perfectly. It punishes you immensely for not playing it perfectly.
Yeah, that's
true. I think this deck is very good if you're great, and very, very bad if you're not.
All right, I agree with that. I think that's a very good statement. I think a lot of people assume Affinity is super easy, which it's not. Speaking of greatness,
I think this is the hardest deck in Modern by a substantial margin.
I can back that up. I'll give you my seal of approval on that one. I got you there.
I mean, my experience with this deck has always been that it feels a lot like Dredge, kind of, in every format, where like you win all your game ones, and then you're playing boarded games, and you're just like, oh, man.
How do I
My
win?
Deck feels so much worse than it used to. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's
it's just a lot harder.
Well, that's where we get the Pray to the Lord of Light, Hazoret. Let's talk about this. So this deck list by Nick Johnson, top four at his RPTQ. Congratulations, Nick. He's playing Hazoret, and some other people have been doing this as well beforehand. What do you think about Hazoret?
I've seen that on and off. I'm not really into it.
Mm-hmm.
on the whole, mostly because I'm not really sure where I'm hoping this is gonna be good.
It's
probably good against Death Shadow.
Yeah, I think it's good against Death Shadow, and we were talking about this.
But
before
Death Shadow
show.
Is an insanely favored matchup already.
Yes, I imagine it's pretty decent against Eldrazi Tron as well, which is already a good matchup. I know.
I mean, yeah, that matchup's almost a buy.
Yeah, but I think, and this sounds absurd, it might just be to make your like insane draws insaner, and like you know you just drew like one too many land normally, and that'd just be game over. But now Hazard's there, and it's like 5/5 haste. Like you dump your hand, you know. You draw like one too many lands and you play this Hazoret. But I don't know if I like it or not.
Yeah. It's powerful, but I feel like okay, so maybe I'm crazy for saying this, but I feel like the card in this 75 that Hazoret is most similar to is Bitter Blossom.
Okay. I feel you're there. I get what you're picking up.
Is that like does that I know that the, like Hazoret and Bitter Blossom are obviously not that similar, but like,
well, PV
in the
same
way
both
that
of them.
You...
Sure. Yeah,
very similar now. I don't know why I didn't see it before.
Yeah.
What I mean, though, is that they're both good in games where your opponent has a lot of removal. I mean, my problem is that Hazoret specifically is kind of embarrassing against Spell Queller and Path to Exile. So it doesn't seem great against Jeskai, which is already probably not a wonderful matchup.
It does tax the paths, I'll say that. I mean, that isn't, you know, the best thing with a Snapcaster deck, but it does force him to, like, you know, have one.
Yeah, no, it's just interesting to me. I know that it was a thing that people were trying a little bit a while ago, and, like, I really liked it when Scapeshift was a little more popular, because that was the matchup where I actually thought it was really good, mm-hmm. just because you wanted, like, another racing card. But Scapeshift has dropped off a little bit, as it also probably has a pretty abysmal humans matchup.
Yep.
And
it does.
It surprises me to see main deck Hazoret. It's the kind of card that, like, it makes more sense to me in an RPTQ than a Grand Prix, because you probably just have a better feel for your local metagame. But I would not be shocked at all if there was just, like, a preponderance of Scapeshift and he knew it.
Okay. Yeah. That's fair.
Because outside of that, I don't think that it's a card I like really want to play a bunch of in the main. I don't think it's a card I want to play in the main deck. No. And other than that, I actually really do like the Bitter Blossom right now.
Yeah, I think the Bitter Blossom's great. But there's another card in the main deck I want to talk about that's starting to pop up, and that's Hope of Gearpour, I believe is the name of the card.
Yes.
What
yes.
do you think
so
about
this
that card?
So this is the one mana artifact that if you attack with it, you can use it to silence your opponent so they can't cast non-creatures until your next turn, right?
Yep.
So it's mostly storm tech, but it's basically mm-hmm. just like there's less burn and more storm, so they cut like a Vault Scourge for it or a Memnite or something like that.
Yeah, it looks like they got the Vault Scourge here.
Well, I mean, they're playing the Hazoret as well, so everything is sort of a little wonky.
That's
but,
fair.
But it's usually basically in the place of one of these cards. And it's kind of fascinating. I think that, like, it's a pretty big main deck hedge because it's substantially worse than most of these other cards. I think, like, one of the big problems is that it's really mostly only good in that matchup because no other decks are really playing Wrath Effects right now in the main deck. Mm-hmm. Like, if the Jeskai decks were a little bit more of a traditional control deck rather than kind of a tempo burn deck, I think that card would be a lot better, mm-hmm. right? Because if you could actually, like, prevent your opponent from casting a Supreme Verdict, it would be pretty powerful.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That being said, having a card that, like, it's probably pretty hard to lose against Storm if you draw that and your hand isn't awful. And that's powerful. I mean, if you can just, like, if it is a 10% downgrade in all but one matchup, but in that matchup it frequently just reads one mana, you win the game. Mm-hmm. That sounds like a worthy one of, right?
Yep. And if you go by the logic of Hazoret, right, where maybe there's Scapeshift and also Storm, while we're talking about it, decks that need to just race, this could be the other hedge. It's like, well, you can't Scapeshift me, you can't Hour me, you can't Gifts me. Game's kind
yeah,
of over.
No, it's certainly very cute in those matchups. Those two specifically, but like it can also be Anger of the Gods Protection.
I think that's the good thing about it, is that it's never truly, like, terrible.
Yeah.
It's always just, like, oh, you can kind of get them sometimes.
But, I mean, a one mana, 1/1 flying is, like, definitely on the underwhelming side of things, right?
Oh, I'm not happy to play it, but I mean,
right.
There are definitely worse cards you could be playing, and it's the kind of tech card that actually has value in the matchups you don't want it into.
It's towing the line of acceptability, right? Yes, it's not that far off from playable. So yeah, I think it's interesting, and like, what the thing that surprises me more, I guess, so we never see another one. I've seen one in a bunch of main decks, but I've never seen anyone play one in the side. And I guess it's just because there are better dedicated cards in the matchups that they want it in, but it's like close enough to main deckable that they feel they can get away with it.
Yeah, probably. What do you think about Rule of Law over Aetherstorm Canist?
It surprises me a little bit, but like they probably are thinking that the Storm decks are likely boarding out Remands and boarding in Lightning Bolts.
Yeah.
So it's probably just with that in mind, right? Yeah. It's a lot harder to get rid of a Rule of Law than it is to get rid of a Canonist. And in the matchups where you need it, you really need it to live. Like, it's nice that Canonist is a 2/2, but you don't really care about that.
Definitely. So that's going to wrap up our power rankings. Michael, if you had to play a modern Grand Prix tomorrow, what deck are you sleeving up?
I'm probably just going to play Grixis Death Shadow if I had to play a modern GP tomorrow. I don't know what the exact split would be. I think that my inclination would be to run one less Snapcaster compared to... So I'm just going to go from Dylan Donegan's list. Mm-hmm. Probably one less Snapcaster, cut the Dismember, play maybe a second Teemer Battle Rage and a second K Command.
In the main deck?
Yeah.
All right. Aggressive. I like it. Got to beat them.
I like the Pyromancers in the board of that deck a lot, by the way.
Oh, yeah. I think Young Peasy in
the
board.
They're really cute. Yeah.
That was, like, Dylan's big thing, too, like, at one SCG, and then it kind of just took off from there. So, I'm glad to see that he's still doing it.
I like that. I like that a lot. And what about you, Mason? If you were playing tomorrow, what do you think you'd play?
I really want to play that green-white value deck. It's so much fun.
Is it good?
So, this is kind of the thing about this deck. Against other fair decks... You're amazing. It's like, I like make baboon plays, and I still have come out way ahead at the end of it, right? Against unfair combo decks, you're so dead game one, and then game two, you just like hope to get down like one of your hate pieces and just ride it. And your deck takes like normally a decent amount of time to win, so it's hard to actually win against the unfair decks. And that's kind of my biggest problem with the deck. Is that like if you told me like I'm only gonna play against Grixis Death Shadow, Jund, Jeskai all day, snap it off. Can't wait.
Right.
But if you're telling me like I'm gonna play against like Storm, Affinity, the deck has like it has like six cards for Affinity that are like specifically for Affinity in all the sideboards, and then you board in about 11 cards total. So you get a lot of many bad ones.
Sideboard, but you're basically seeding game one.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, you're basically just losing game one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like in Grand Prix metagames, trying to play the matchup lottery just isn't what I want to do.
Yeah, I probably end up like, playing something like
Texas. I just like playing more balanced, fair decks and just trying to grind out wins.
Yeah, I used to be that way a lot, but with Modern recently, I've been playing a lot of Titan Shift for like the last 6 months, five months, and I've kind of become the guy that in Modern, I'm like, I'm going to make you have the stuff to beat me. And one of the things I like about Titan Shift is that it is hard to interact with, and you have to have a fast clock to beat it normally. So
That makes sense.
Yeah.
It's hard to fault that as a philosophy.
Yeah, we can't all be like Michael here with 110-ish wins in Grand Prix and like 30 losses. Insane.
I wish it was 30. That would be so much better than what it is.
No, that's what it is. Me and Danny looked it up on LTO. Someone clearly doesn't listen.
I can tell you it's not 110 and 30. That would be an upgrade.
It's pretty close to that. At least the ones that we saw. I don't know. We'll have to talk about this outside the show.
I think it's like 110 and 50.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's all pretty absurd, though, still. All right. Well, that's going to cover us for Modern this week. Magic's most popular format, covered by Magic's most popular podcast with Mason Clark as the guest host. So, yeah, let's go move on.
Aggressive statement, probably just untrue, but sometimes I feel that way saying that modern is a popular format. it's popular, but it shouldn't be.
You're not super happy to be playing modern at Bilbao?
Well, I like it right now, but sometimes it does get really bad. It's a format where, like, it gets a lot better or worse depending on the metagame. I think the metagame right now is, like, better than it's been in a while.
Yeah, I think the metagame now is the best modern metagame I've ever played, and I don't think it's particularly close.
Yeah, there's just a lot of playable decks and cards that are, like, fun and interesting.
Yeah, and it feels like literally every strategy is, like, respectable. Like, it's like, oh, yeah, I can see why you want to play that. Like, it might not be the best, but it's like, oh, yeah, I'm not going to get on you for playing that. So, yeah, modern.
Yeah, no, and I like that. I like when you can play what you want.
Exactly. You can play the Rack, Michael. I'm all about it. I'm so excited.
I don't want to play that.
Why do you not want to play the Rack? It had 3 top 8s of the Classic this weekend. Clearly, it's the best deck.
I'm not playing a deck where you choose to draw.
Oh. You can't lose to Dice Roll, Michael.
I'm also not choosing... I'm also not playing Manaless Dredge, right? Like,
well, I would never play Manaless Dredge. I'm not absurd. But 8 Rack, I mean, you can't lose to Dice Roll. How many times do you hear people complain about losing the Dice Roll and they lost the matchup? How do you lose with 8 Rack?
By winning the Dice Roll and still losing the matchup.
Well, no. My statement was you can't lose the Dice Roll, Michael. You can still lose the game. Come on. This isn't Hearthstone.
Yeah, you can lose the game real easy.
Yeah, well, you know, agree to disagree. The Rack's clearly the best deck in Modern. But one thing that the Rack doesn't do, though, is ever play from ahead. And that's what we're talking about this week on the show. So our training grounds this week is playing from ahead. So, Michael, I'm going to ask you, kind of like Spencer always asks you, what does playing from ahead mean?
Okay, so I think trying to learn to play from ahead is, so sometimes when there are like threats on the board and you're trying to answer them, it's easy to see what the game is about, like what you have to remove to probably be able to win, and why the game is about what it's about. When you're winning, sometimes trying to decide how much pressure to apply, how to sequence your spells, what you should hold, what you should spend, how you should trade cards, like as resources in your hand versus creatures on the battlefield versus your opponents. Like, so do I trade my creature for their creature, or do I trade a card in my hand for their creature? Sometimes it's just a little more complex, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes playing from ahead is a little bit trickier just because you can actually have less information when you're winning than when you're losing sometimes.
Definitely. Yeah. One thing I think that I used to do a whole lot and I still see people do, at least in my local area, is they overthink things when they're ahead. So they get to a point where it's like they'll play around every single card and just give their opponent like 3 or 4 draw steps instead of like making reasonable deductions and stuff.
Sure,
like that.
And end up not losing.
You cut out there for a second, Michael.
Single card. So sometimes you can avoid losing to a single card, but instead lose to 2 cards in tandem.
Exactly.
Something like that.
Exactly, yeah. Like a thing I can remember is I was playing a match with a friend, and he wanted to play on Convocation Coup, and because he did that, he like played a Chandra, which didn't put enough pressure on me, and it gave me time to like draw the answer to Chandra and then get a spell and then come back to win the game, because he didn't just slam the Scarab God with mana up. So, yeah. And it was something, too, where it's like the Convocation Coup would have made sense to play earlier. So
Right. So it would have been one of your last 2 draw steps or whatever. So that happens. Sometimes I think one of the easy ways to have this happen is like you will overthink things by like you. So say I have a Vraska's Contempt in my hand and I'm thinking, OK, so I have, you know, a Rogue Refiner and a Whirler Virtuoso. My opponent has a Rogue Refiner. And instead of just Vraska's Contempting the Rogue Refiner, I might decide that I'm okay making a trade because I think I need the Vraska's Contempt for a more impactful threat. But sometimes, and I mean, and the thing that makes these mistakes so tricky is that they are correct sometimes, right? I mean, obviously sometimes you should play around Confiscation Coup, and sometimes you should trade a creature on board rather than using a removal spell. But when you sort of overthink the situation and maybe play around cards that your opponent couldn't realistically have at the moment, I think your point about slowing the game down is a really poignant one. One of the ways that you can give your opponents a lot more ability to win in these spots is sort of overthinking what they could have and just giving them extra draw steps.
Definitely. Yeah. I think, and to kind of go to right off this point we've been on here, it's when you're playing the game, thinking about like, okay, like they're losing the game. Like clearly we're talking about a position where you're clearly ahead, right? It's like, right. If the confiscation coup, to use the same example, right, would have been good the turn before to take the Glorybringer, right, to relieve pressure and stuff, am I okay with, like, putting this extra threat out, though, in the game immediately, right, instead of having to ride the game on for much longer, assuming they drew it, like, in the next draw step, and, like, the level at which you want to play around something. And then thinking, right. Like, well, they could draw their own Glorybringer, and all these other things, and, like, Harness Lightning, Chandra's Defeats, these are all cards, right, that can kill the Glorybringer, for example, you know.
Right. Or if something does get Harnessed Lightning, you know that they probably didn't have a confiscation goof for it, right? But on the flip side, I think thinking about not getting lazy is important, because one of the ways that you can lose games when you're far ahead is deciding you're just not going to play around confiscation coup when the marginal cost of playing around it would be extremely low.
Oh yeah, yeah. I think, right? I think maybe you have
say 20 energy or whatever, or you have a ton, right? And you could play a Whirler Virtuoso or a Scarab God, and your opponent might have confiscation coup. So you might decide, you know, oh, whatever, I'll just play the Scarab God, and you could lose to it. But if you play the Whirler, it doesn't, you know, things like that, right?
Yes.
So at the same time, I think making sure that you're not just making a bad play for no reason.
Yeah, I think the biggest...
Sometimes, you know, you're just sort of like, okay, the game's over, whatever. You know, let's push through the end of it. I'm going to play a card. It's going to kill them. Great.
Yeah, another thing along that train of thought real quick is, like, a lot of times people will be like, they've been curving, like, Long Dust Cup, Rogue Refiner, Hydra, Glorybringer, and they'll just, like, slam the Scarab God. It's like, look at all my stuff, you know? And they just, like, slam it on the table. And that's a moment where your opponent can, like, Confiscation Coup and pull ahead. But going back to the situation that you were talking about, yeah, I think... having a purpose is, like, one of the biggest things in Magic. It's something that, you know, you guys talk on the show a lot about. Is, like, even if your game plan isn't good, having a game plan is really important. And the same thing with, like, the actions when you're choosing to play around cards, right? Like, if you think your opponent doesn't have has Confiscation Coup from the way they've played, right, and everything, then it's reasonable to play around Confiscation Coup. But if they've also played, like, they're just Harness Lightning all the Glorybringers, or, like, maybe you have a huge Cub, right, and they've just been chump blocking it or taking the attack instead of cooing it, it might make sense to not play around Confiscation Coup, because it's like, well, I have a 10-10 Long Tusk Cub, you know, for the last two turns. They got to draw the coup this turn. So I think making plays and having a reason for the play is super big too.
Yeah, I think it's mostly just, it comes down to having a reason. And I think maybe we should talk about, like, sort of tunnel visioning. I guess this sort of comes down to, this is sort of like overthinking things in some ways, right? So, like, in the same way that you might try so hard to play around, so you talked about an example where your friend decided to play a Chandra to avoid a confiscation coup that you may or may not have even had. Sometimes information is revealed in some way, like you might actually know they have a confiscation coup somehow, or you're very convinced from the way that they have played the game that they have a confiscation coup, or you just think it's the only way you could possibly lose, and you might make plays that are, you know, too passive, or on the flip side, you might make a play that's too aggressive and, like, you know, get blown out by an hour of devastation or something like that, right? And just sort of getting focused on thinking there's only one way I could possibly lose this game. And instead of continuing to play Magic to win, you sort of...
yeah, you start playing it to not lose. I think we lost Michael, by the way. Oh, there we go.
Cool. For a single situation.
Yeah, we lost you there for a little bit. The last thing we heard was not playing to win, I believe is what you said.
Right, so instead of trying to figure out just how you can deal the most damage or whatever, sometimes you'll be thinking about confiscation coup or hour of devastation or some very specific card and just get really focused on beating that specifically. And I think that when your focus shifts to be really narrow, you have to be very careful.
Definitely.
It's not always wrong to narrow your focus. And I think this is what makes all of this so difficult to evaluate sometimes, that all of these are things that can work in your favor, right? There are times where, like tunnel visioning on confiscation coup, you might just need to be really careful because the sequencing and the cards that you play, the game gets really tricky to play around a single card.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's one of the things that makes Magic so fun.
So it's finding balance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to find
balance. And then I think, and then I think basically just trying to make sure that when you're ahead, you reduce the total number of draw steps to the most reasonable degree that you can.
I really love that you said the most reasonable. I think that's a big thing. Like, people will try and be the quickest they possibly can, and that's play into stuff like we just talked about.
Right. So it goes both ways, right? What you have to figure out is you don't have to massively overkill your opponent, right? You need to get them to exactly zero, and we're going to try to find the most efficient way to get them to exactly zero.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. And I think it's just true. And I really like the point you've been making so far and really hammering in that all these things they're true, but sometimes they're not true. And you have to come out with a grain of salt and an angle and a plan of attack. And you can't just do things to do them.
Right. And I think that's what makes Magic so great, right? I mean, we're really thinking about playing around specific cards, but also deciding that there are going to be times where you can't beat a specific card, and by playing around it, you give your opponent maybe more chances at drawing some other combination of cards that could win them a game.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting, and it's really difficult. Trying to play Magic optimally, it's a game of limited information, so sometimes you're going to make a play that you believe was correct, and you're going to get punished for it, and that's how it goes. But I think that your point of making sure that there's a reason for your play is maybe more important than anything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I this is something that, I had a friend recently not do so well, and it was not as well as they wanted to do at an event, right? And they kind of, got a little upset, and they were... Basically, they were saying, winning is the only thing that, matters and the results matter. And, I'm upset because I feel like I can do better, etc. And what I had to tell them was I don't think winning really... It's weird because, obviously you go to play Magic to win, but that's not really my goal. My goal is that when I come out of it, if my friends ask me, did I have reasons for my plays? Did I think I made sound decisions? Did I play Magic as well as I could? That's my goal. And I find that when you do that a lot, victories and W's come with it. And that's all you can really do. No one's guaranteed to win a tournament. No one's entitled to win a tournament. All you can guarantee is that you play the best you can.
Yeah, I like those points a lot. And I think one of the things that I've taken away from trying to improve at Magic is that if you can justify your plays to yourself, it's a lot easier to reflect on the plays that you made, break them down, and improve. Because your plays are more conscious, right? If your takeaway from an event is I need to be more cognizant of what I'm doing, that's a good takeaway. But you can only have that takeaway so many times before you're just being lazy.
I agree 100% with that. I echo that statement a lot. I think being an active participant in your – I think this goes outside of Magic too. But being an active participant in your life and in your game-making decisions – is really what matters a whole lot. And I think a lot of players like to say, my opponent had some weird Mardu deck that I couldn't just beat, right? Or they had all these cards just to beat me, and they let other factors, which might be true, lead them down this road of oh, they were just doomed and everything was out of their control. And I feel like a lot of times it doesn't actually play out that way. At least that's not been my experience.
You definitely play games like that. I mean, I'm not going to say you never play a game where your opponent, just has it all or whatever. But I think that it's more about why do we put the focus on the choices we make, right? And that's because you don't get to control what deck your opponent's playing. Right. All you can do is control the deck and card choices you make, the sideboarding decisions you make, the mulligan. Right. You have all these decisions before the event, during the event, after the event. And I think that just trying to make sure that when you're thinking about what happened, you're thinking about it in a productive and sort of from a learning mindset, just gives you the best chance to improve and ultimately get closer to, you know, playing consistently good Magic.
Yeah, I agree with that a whole lot. Yeah, and I think, you know, like being active and thinking about that stuff kind of, it really does kind of summarize the entire point of this, right? That really when you're playing from ahead, and I think, and correct me if I feel I'm wrong here, but ultimately it's about staying active in the game. Even though you're super far ahead on board, and you have like the 10-10 long test cub and the Rogue of Fires, etc., you don't check out and you stay active in Magic. Because if you don't, you're not entitled to win the game, and your opponent can come back.
Yeah, and again, you know, there are a lot of tough decisions whether you're winning or losing. And I think that sometimes it's easier to feel like your opponent, you know, top decked you out of a game when you were winning on board. But maybe the takeaway is just let's try to find reasons for what we're doing in every stage of the game, because then you can improve. Then you get to evaluate whether those decisions were good or bad.
Yep, 100% agree. You never want to be the baboon. Well, that's going to end our training ground this week. I thought that was a good training ground. I really liked it. I think it had a lot of interesting points, and I liked a lot of the stuff you said that I hadn't really thought of in that way before. It's very cool. I liked it.
Yeah, I think playing from ahead is really tricky. I think that we get used to information being about equal, but oftentimes when your opponent doesn't have as many things in play, it's a little bit trickier to figure out why the game is going like it is, right? Yeah. You've given your opponent more information than they've given you, and I think that kind of information imbalance makes it easy to make poor decisions.
Definitely, I agree. Well, let's move on here to the wrap-up of the show. If you like the show and you want to support us, you can go to patreon.com. The show will always be free, but if you feel like you want to give back, we will gladly appreciate it. You can find me at SOV Mason on Twitter. You can find me in the Constructed Family and the Constructed Criticism Facebook group, which if you're a Patreon member, you do get access to the Constructed Critic group where people are talking about Magic, decklist. You'll see Michael post his decklist before events. You'll see Spencer posting the latest and greatest snake deck on there and this general Magic discussion. And if you just want to join the family and hang out and talk about stuff, you can get the Constructed Criticism family. And if you're not trying to sell me Ray-Bans, Spencer will let you in. Michael, where can people find you?
You can find me on Facebook. My name is Michael Handerocker. You can also find me on Twitter at MagicMikeMTG. You can probably find me playing Magic frequently.
Yeah? Are you going to start streaming again?
I may. I need to get a new overlay made, but potentially soon here.
That's what the people want, Michael. They don't like it when I stream at the Mason Clark on Twitch, but
I like it.
Oh, well, that makes my heart happy, Michael. Glad to hear that. I see you in chat sometimes, and sometimes I'll pull up the chat list. And I'm like, oh, Michael's still watching. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can find me on Twitch at the Mason Clark, and I stream Modern, Standard, whatever. But if you really want to keep getting better at Magic and you want some more great podcasts, Michael, you can check out Limited Time Only. That's with Spencer and Danny Cathro, another silver pro from Utah, where they talk about Limited in a timely way. And you can also check out our sister podcast, Proven Combatants. It has the cats, which is, and I'm going to get this right in the correct order, Chantel, Autumn, Teresa, and Sarah. They are four ladies who are grinding away at Magic the Gathering, and they have their bi-weekly podcast. It's pretty great. I help them out over there. The ladies are knocking it out, just doing great. And yeah, you can join the conversation with #WouldThatBeGood. #WouldThatBeGood as a Twitter outreach program. If you tweet it, Spencer will read it. So let's see here. We got to go back to 11:22. Is that right, Michael? Because that was like,
cause yeah, Spencer's probably not going to read it tonight. But, yeah, you know.
Well, I like to think that Spencer's at home reading it right now.
But, okay, out loud?
Yeah, but yeah. I guess you and I can fill in for him since he's being, what is the word, a father? Never had one.
Yeah,
don't know
something
what he's
like
talking
that.
About. Yeah.
All right.
All right.
So Adrian tweets, won the Dredge Mirror through an opposing black ley line. #WouldThatBeGood. That sounds more like a dredge mirror than you'd think. Like, sometimes, you know, you decide you have to mulligan, and then you decide you have to mulligan, and then you decide you have to mulligan, and you decide you have to mulligan, and your three happens to have a ley line, but your opponent, you know, just goes, like, Narcomoeba into Narcomoeba, and you die a horrible death.
Michael, I feel like you might be projecting. Did that happen to you once? Did
someone touch you? I mean, I'm pretty sure that I'm pretty sure that I have won and lost games in that mirror that seemed very unlikely.
Dredge always surprises me.
It's goofy. I love it.
It's a crazy, crazy modern deck. Spencer tweets, went to the new Oasis Games SLC tonight. Can confirm that the new place is, in fact, fire emoji lit fire emoji. Hashtag would it be good.
It's huge.
Yeah.
It's sweet. If you're in Utah, come check it out. Yeah, I think it's like 8,000, 9,000 square feet.
Mm-hmm.
Which is pretty massive.
Yep. We've got a little bit more of a serious one up here, Michael, if you want to handle this one.
All right. Andrew retweeting Spencer, says, I'm pretty vocally against HQ and all his BS, but I think the bigger problem are people who support him to be funny, getting him riled up, and making him believe what he does is acceptable. Stop trolling and stand up for what is right. Hashtag MTG. And yeah, I mean, I don't really have a lot to say about this, but I would like... I generally would hope that people who are trying to get other people to listen to them would be considerate of the feelings of others in the community, and it's really too bad when they aren't. And I hope that going forward the community can be a more welcoming place.
110%, I agree. I think basically everything that has been said.
Yeah.
And there's not much more we can say. What I'm going to say is, you know, talking's cheap. Actions are what matter at this point. So just try and make your area as welcoming as it can be. And I think, I think if all the people in your area do that, it's pretty easy. And I'm pretty happy because my area is
we'll all have a better time.
Right? Yep.
Yeah. I mean, that's ultimately the goal.
Yep.
There's plenty of space for everyone to enjoy themselves.
I agree. You know who else enjoyed themselves? Adrian tweeted, won a PBDQ today. This time I did play Rogue Refiners. Hashtag, would that be good?
Yeah, that sounds great.
Yep.
Teamer.
Yep. I was talking to Michael before the podcast, and I said my criteria for this format is my deck has to have Rogue Refiner. So I'm all in with you there, Adrian. I'm all in on Rogue Refiner, Michael.
Yeah, I really like Rogue Refiner, too.
Yep. Is this one for us? This next one, are you seeing it?
Ate most of a bag, Scotty tweets, ate most of a bag of Legacy Gummy Bears, the chemically made Haribo sugar-free infamous, because if I'm going to give these to somebody else, I have to be willing to do it myself first. Hashtag, would that be good? Hashtag, I'm scared. Hashtag, it hurts so much. I mean, that just sounds actively bad. I specifically wouldn't do that.
Scotty, I like that you're willing to go down with the ship, though. You're like, if I'm going to ruin my friend's day, I got to ruin my day first.
I mean...
On that, I have...
Why? I don't really... That just doesn't... That doesn't click for me.
Michael, some people play the rack. Some people go down with their own ship. I got pride for
that. Yeah, I guess.
I mean, like, if you're going to ruin, like, a friend's day and, like, actively, like, give them, like, a spiked thing or something that's going to taste nasty, the least you can do is go down
with
them.
You're going to eat it yourself first? Well, I mean, I feel like you should just do neither. It seems like such a better solution.
What happened? Right. What happened to you, Michael? You used to be so adventurous and play Dredge, and now you're just playing safe teamer decks and making safe tweets. Can't trust you anymore.
limited time only tweets. Our show is moving back to Thursdays at 8 p.m. Pacific. Jeez. Hashtag MTG. Hashtag would that be good?
Yeah. It's great.
Yeah, so 8 p.m. Pacific. Just throwing that out there for all you guys who want to get better at guys and gals who want to get better at limited.
If you amigos, and, that's what I say.
You're
all my amigos.
Unless you give me sugar-free gummy bears, and then I don't know about that.
I feel like they're just sugar-free. There's nothing really that weird about them.
Well, it depends on what
sugar
substitute, like sugar alcohols or whatever, will cause massive cramping.
Oh, yeah.
Most people, like, you can't eat it in that quantity.
That's fair.
So if you want to eat like a gummy bear, it's fine. If you want to eat like a bag of them, it's really not okay.
Word. I think this next one might be directed at me, so I'll read it. Thomas Bitter tweets at Spencer Halland, hashtag would that be good, and it's a picture. It says fruit pizza doesn't even have pineapple, and it's a watermelon pizza that seems to have kiwi, feta cheese, strawberries, and I believe blueberries.
I mean, I think that's mostly because feta cheese with pineapple sounds actively terrible.
Well, there's no pineapple on this pizza.
Right. But that's why there's no pineapple, right? It's because of feta cheese.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm a like big supporter of eat the pizza the way you want to. Did you see where Patrick Sullivan talked about that on the Invitational this weekend?
No.
During one of the matches, Cedric asked him, what's your opinion on pineapple on pizzas? And he said, I am okay with it either way, but I feel like if you are super rigid in the way someone should eat their pizza, you might need to like reevaluate where you're at with your life. So maybe certain people should stop judging me for the way I eat my pizza. All right, you can take the next one.
All right. Mason tweets, hot take. I think any team unified event in any format is boring to watch. And I completely agree. Unified is just a bad format.
At least with Sealed it makes sense. But with Standard, it's like, why am I watching this? Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Team Unified Standard is just bad.
Yeah. It was.
It's just bad. Team Unified is just bad format.
Yeah, like, it was so clear going this weekend that, like, a deck was going to be red, a deck was going to be blue-white something, and then there was going to be the energy cards. And it was like, you know what would really be healthy for this format people aren't super happy about? Let them watch the same three decks every round. Yeah,
and I mean, it just, like, really encourages it. And I mean, I get that, like, that's just how it works. But I don't know that that format makes for great viewing in general. Like, there just aren't enough cards in the pool for it to be very interesting.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking about it today at work, and I was like, I would really like it if they did, like, Standard, Modern, and then when they announce their new Modern, whenever that comes, Frontier, air quotes, you do that. Because then at least the three formats are exciting and different. Because I understand that, like, it could be hard for people to get a Legacy deck, because that's, like, really expensive, and, you know, like, not every country can afford to have that, etc. So I guess that's a privilege we have. But I would really like it if they would make a new Modern, because they're going to eventually, that's just a fact. I mean, and then have that be the third format, and we just don't
play Team Unified. I mostly just don't want, just Team Unified is just bad format in general. Like,
is the GP you're going to, the team one, is it Unified, or is it like the Modern Standard?
No, it's Standard Modern Legacy.
Oh, sweet. What are you playing? Which format?
I think I'm going to end up playing Standard. I would be happy to play any of them, though. I'm not very picky.
Yeah, flexing over there. Silver Pro Life. All right.
I just like playing Magic, you know? Whatever.
Okay. Is this one for us?
I think so.
Is that a sports ball thing?
Jared tweets. Yeah, this is a sports ball thing. Okay. Jared tweets, hashtag suspend Gronk, hashtag would that be good, hashtag white privilege. Gronkowski did indeed get suspended because his hit was pretty bad. Basically, like, wrestling moved a guy who was on the ground, and, you know, that wasn't cool.
Why would you do that? That's just rude.
Yeah, it was bad look. So,
sounds terrible.
Dirty play, got suspended.
All right. Michael Robinson tweets, you haven't played Magic in 3 months, but you have followed the modern meta. What would be the first deck you picked up upon returning, assuming no problem with card selection? Hashtag would that be good. So what deck would you pick up in modern if you've been following it?
Okay, so we know what the decks are, so we're not going to get, like, blindsided by not understanding. I'd probably play Grixis Death Shadow. Like, I think that's a deck that you will grow with and get better with, but it's not a deck with an insanely high skill floor where, like, to ever win with it, you need to be playing it really well. And I think if you grab something like Storm or something like Affinity, along those lines, you might be aware of its existence. Yeah, or Affinity. Like, you know those decks exist, but playing them at a reasonably competent level is just very, very difficult.
Yeah, I agree. Death Shadow's good, and for the sake of diversity, I think Jeskai is also good for similar reasons.
Yeah, I think any of, like, basically, if I know what other decks are playing, but I haven't played a lot myself, I lean more towards fair decks because I think you're rewarded for your knowledge and punished less for your lack of specific play pattern knowledge. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't need to know as many tricks to cast Lightning Helix and Spell Queller as you do to, like, use your rituals in weird situations. Like, I just think the sequencing is harder in the unfair decks a lot of the time.
I agree. It's a lot like a test, right? If you have two questions on your test, if you get one wrong, you get a 50 and you fail. But if you have 20 questions, you can get, like, three wrong and still pass. So.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, like, mulliganing and all that stuff and, like, just, like, basic forms of sequencing are always, like, kind of difficult and are going to be the kind of thing that you get better or worse at the more you play. But I think that picking unfair decks when you are first playing a format, if you're trying to win immediately, it's just very, very tough.
Yeah, I agreed. Let's move on to the next one.
All right. Mason tweets and Chantel likes.
And pineapple Teresa on likes. Pizza. Everyone likes this tweet it's the truth.
Chantel and, well, I think I follow Chantel, so it told me that Chantel likes it. But Chantel, Teresa, and Andrew all agree pineapple on pizza is the best. That's why you can trust the cats at CombatantsMTG. Hashtag, would that be good?
Boom.
So, did you tweet that before or after you learned Spencer would not be on the show?
During the show. It hit me when you were talking about Affinity. I was like, oh, that'd be really funny. So I tweeted it. And now here we are.
Perfect.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like, you know, it's kind of like a wedding. You know, right now on the show, we're going to say pineapple's the best. If you have any objections, say it now or forever hold your peace. Right.
Okay. So you're getting this out of the way while Spencer is incapacitated.
I would never do that to my friend Spencer and not give him a fair shake to talk on his own podcast on his network. That would be unfair of me. But if I were going to do it, I would do it right now when he's the one time in history he's not hosting Constructed Criticism. And then, yeah, so I'm doing that. All right. On to the last one. Andrew Elliott tweets, Mason being the standard player for hashtag SCG Cincy with me and James Hesh, hashtag would that be good? Well, I think having me on your team would be good, Andrew, but I didn't agree to this. Also, I didn't know there was a team SCG. So
sounds great. Sounds like you're going.
Yes, it sounds
deal.
Like,
snap it off.
Sounds like I'm going, and I'll definitely take at least half that team. Thank you, everyone, for watching this week. We had a great time, Michael. It was awesome doing this with you, man. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was fun.
All right. It's fun. We'll see y'all next week with your regularly scheduled host, Spencer Howland. Magic.